Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Stockyard Sessions podcast from Atlas Ag, the team behind Atlas Carbon and Meyer Grazing. My name is Matthew Peacock and this is episode 4, The Educator. And the man that I'm talking about is Joel Williams. Joel is an independent plant and soil health educator providing lectures, workshops and consultation on soil management, plant nutrition and integrated approaches of sustainable food production. Joel has completed a Bachelor of Agricultural Science specializing in plant and soil dynamics and a Master's in Food Policy, which focused on food systems, intercropping and agroecological transitions. So if there is any doubting this man's credentials, I hope that lays it to rest right away. Joel, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for your time.
Thanks very much, Matt. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I was reading that intro from the Integrated Soils website. Tell me a bit about you and Integrated Soils and what that's all about.
So Integrated Soils is just the vehicle through which I do my work, and that work is primarily education. I deliver workshops, speak at conferences, run field days, all sorts of types of events where I do adult education, share with farmers some of the latest science around soil health and other related topics, and share that with them. And we, you know, translate that into practical and actionable strategies. So it's really about trying to bring together some of the science and the theory and put that into practice. So I'm an independent educator and just deliver information and workshops and then do a little bit of consulting and things as well on the side.
I've been lucky enough to see you at two separate events, so I have seen you present and, you know, the crowd are always really engaged with what you got to say. I want to go back to that in just a second, but first of all, where are you? I'm in a studio in Sydney. Whereabouts are you for this podcast?
I am in Canada, in my home in just outside of Toronto in Canada.
How much time do you spend on the road then, Joel? Is it a full diary of travel for you?
It is a lot of time. Well, the last 2 years has been particularly busy, and yeah, this year has been very crazy. I probably spend at least kind of half of the year away from home, at least that. So I have a very patient family that put up with that.
And do you like coming back to Australia?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've been really lucky through my career. I've been a little bit nomadic. Born and raised in Australia and worked there initially, and I moved over to the UK after that and lived there for about 10 years and then moved here to Canada. But so I have family, of course, still in Australia, but I also have family in the UK. My father was Welsh, so I'm kind of half Welsh, I guess you'd say, or have some UK connections anyway. So I have some uncles and a sister and some family there too. So visiting both of these places is a real pleasure because I get to catch up with some both family, but also some friends, having that I lived in these areas as well. So yeah, always good to reconnect with people and place. And yeah, I love going back to both those two countries.
Fantastic. So why agriculture and why soil health? How did your career sort of take the journey to where you are today?
I don't actually come from a farming background, but I got into this through growing as a teenager. I must have been about 14, maybe 15 or so. I got right into growing vegetables, and that was kind of my entry point. And through that, just took a kind of really deep interest in composting, in soil, in the land, and growing fruit and vegetables at that time. And by the time I kind of finished school, I just decided that's what I wanted to do, go and study agriculture, and particularly with a focus on soils. So yeah, that was kind of my entry point. And then I think because of that, because I had that background in growing veg initially, it was also a time where I took a little bit of interest in food and cooking and health and nutrition. You know, those parts kind of start to link in. And I think it was a little bit of that. I would enjoy growing food and then take it into the kitchen and, you know, have a go at cooking it and turning it into something to eat. And so I think it was also that link that from an early age there that I was also very interested in that idea of producing healthy food and taking care of the soil to grow healthy food, and that's going to translate into healthy people and healthy planet and the like. So I guess I always had a little bit of that slant, and have just kind of always been interested in really how we can improve soils and how we can do more with less, how we can be as sustainable as we can, minimizing our footprint on planet Earth, so to speak. So yeah, it was always just something. It was a bit more of an interest that came with that for me.
Not to get too deep too early, but as a sort of race of humans, are we moving in the right direction when it comes to our food systems, or is there still lots to do in your view?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I mean, It's got to be both. I mean, it's probably both those extremes are true. Both those statements are true. Of course, it's, you know, I get, well, here's one analogy. I guess if I think back 20 odd years when I graduated with my ag science degree, soils were not quite the buzz that they are today. Soils had a bit of a reputation, certainly amongst other university students at the time, agricultural students at the time, had a bit of a reputation for being quite a dry subject, quite a bland and dry subject. And just to think 20 years later, I mean, it is, of course, as everyone knows, very much the flavor of the month and so much interest and traction in the space of soils. So if I think about it in that context, I think, well, sure, that's a good, got to be a good sign. All the conversations we're having today about producing food, but we're also linking into that, you know, taking care of landscapes, supporting people and community. So, you know, those conversations that we're having now are more recent, and clearly that's a sign that we're heading in the right direction. So I think that's got to be really positive. But sure, I mean, there's a lot of things that we still have a lot of work to do on across the food system. So I think, yeah, it's a bit of both to that one.
I think no wonder your family are happy to let you travel if you come home and grow your own food and then cook it for everybody. You know, that's a tick in the box, right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, it's a bit hard. I can barely get the missus to water the garden and keep it alive these days. So I've had to scale back a little bit my gardening.
Let's talk about resilience of farm businesses. How important, in your view, is soil health in improving the resilience and the productivity of farm businesses and the, you know, the long-term success of those farm businesses?
Really important. I think the main reason being it's, okay, we use that word resilience, which I think can take many different meanings around environmental resilience, evening out some of the weather extremes, et cetera. But we can also think about it from a financial and farm business management aspect. And I think that really what soil health brings is some element of kind of consistency. And I think that consistency, which we could maybe overlap with that word resilience there, it provides an opportunity to make better decisions, make better farming decisions. And I think that that's what's the real benefit of soil health. When you have healthy soils, sure, they're going to function better in wet years. They're going to function better in those dry years. So they're going to help farmers to kind of, so to speak, you know, weather the storm. And sometimes with that, under these kind of more soil health and regenerative type focus systems, sure, sometimes the highs, the good years, you might not be as high as some of your neighbors. Some of the highs are not as high. But in those poor years, sure, definitely the lows are not as low. And I think that's a real challenge with conventional agriculture these days. It's just become a very risky business because of, yeah, sure, there's high highs out there, but there's also some deep lows. And this is really hard to make sound and risk-averse kind of business decisions. It just makes that really tricky. And I think that that's what soil health kind of brings, is evening out those extremes. And that really just puts farmers in a better position to make, you know, wiser decisions about, you know, what to spend, what to do, what to expect, that kind of thing. And that takes a lot of stress off the shoulders as well, I think, from that personal and mental health aspects. That's got to make for a better mindset in terms of how you approach some of those challenges. So I think, you know, bringing in just a few different contexts there, not only soil, environmental, but also business, but also personal, I think it really helps farmers to manage their businesses much better and do it in a much more happier state of mind.
And that makes sense, right? Balance with ecology, balance with nature, sort of in touch with nature. Mm. You know, the more that farmers can achieve that, the better off you would think they're livelihoods are going to be.
That's right. Absolutely.
Really fascinating. We'll come back to some of that later on as well, especially the sort of mental health component, which interests me. Let's talk a bit about the biology. What are the main biological indicators of soil health? What should farmers be looking out for or looking to improve?
Yeah, there's a big question too. You know, everyone is particularly interested in the soil biology in recent years, and look, rightly so. You know, they're still a very untapped potential. We have a lot of knowledge gaps. They're still a bit of a black box. And the more we kind of unpack that and understand that deeper and deeper, of course, they have huge potential to help us, particularly with the sustainability aspects of food production. But in terms of then measuring, managing, you know, soil biology, look, it's a hugely complex topic and it's such a huge and complex world down there. So trying to kind of measure and manage it becomes somewhat tricky. So I would say that personally, some of the more simpler in-field strategies that farmers can use would be, of course, taking a spade out into the fields with them and getting that spade into the soil. And, you know, we could do some simple things around earthworm counts, for example. How many earthworms do we have in a spade square of kind of soil? We could be doing dung beetle counts. So we're literally looking for the signs of life. What insects do we see? What dung beetles do we maybe see under our cowpats and the like? We could also look at the soil color, but even the soil smell. The smells of the soil gives us a bit of a basic or a crude indicator of the soil biological activity. If the soil smells very sour, very anaerobic, if it smells a bit kind of ammonia and sulfurous, a very unpleasant smell, okay, that tells us that the soil biology is not functioning so well. If it has that nice aerobic or forest floor, soily, earthy kind of smell, then these are some kind of better indicators. So we could do some kind of basic infield tests like that, but we could also send soils off to a laboratory and sure, they could measure things like how many microorganisms are there, the microbial biomass, for example, how active they are, how much CO2 they're producing, how much they're respiring or how active, through to other measuring other things like other ways to measure their activity, like such as through enzymes. So measuring some of the enzymatic activity. So that there'd be kind of other things we could do a bit more deeper through the lab. But I think that some of those field-based tests and measurements are of also critical importance for farmers to get out there and just look and hone their senses and compare different fields, compare different parts of the field, and just look at some of those indicators there.
Is there still a bit of a misconception that above-ground biomass equates to soil health, or do we need to start focusing more on below-ground biomass? It sounds like we do from what you've said.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's particularly true when we talk about soil carbon as well. There's been this kind of general assumption that as we increase productivity, that we'll increase soil carbon. Just for that simple idea that with increases in productivity comes more biomass, more residue that can be integrated into the soil. And as that residue decays and breaks down, it helps to form soil organic matter, soil organic carbon. So I think that there's been this big assumption around increasing productivity is going to increase soil carbon. And of course, if we increase soil carbon, that's generally going to be increasing soil health. You know, if we could kind of link those things a little bit there as well. But yeah, you're right. What's really key is that actually what happens above ground is, of course, very important, but actually more directly what drives changes in soil carbon and also in soil health is root mass, is below ground carbon. It's roots that penetrate through into the soil that help to restructure that soil, create channels and tunnels and the like that help to then restructure, improve the soil physics. It's those channels and tunnels that then help to that soil to breathe, so let that oxygen get into that soil. And when that soil can breathe, the biology can function. And when the biology can function, they can cycle the nutrients and release some of that soil chemistry. So it's the roots that are really key drivers of this through the root mass, but also through those root exudates. The root exudates are really important at scavenging nutrients, feeding soil biology as well. You're absolutely right. It's much more of the direct impacts are very much more so driven by how much roots we can grow, how much root mass, the architecture of those roots, how deep those roots go, but also then how much of the root exudates are excreted and leaking out of those root systems as they do that work. And it is all of that below ground carbon and the associated microbiome biology that interacts with that, that very much drives a lot of the changes in and improvements in soil health.
So roots, not shoots then. And I think I've stolen that from a presentation you've given sometime in the past, by the way.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. So, there's a couple of good studies that have all looked at this. And one of the review papers there suggested that basically root mass is about five times more effective than an equivalent mass of above ground shoot mass, particularly at forming soil, stable soil organic matter. So that's right. It really is all about the roots. Now, of course, we don't get roots without shoots, you know. So, of course, what's happening above ground is, of course, still really important. But conceptually here, it's really valuable for farmers to understand this, to think about, well, what decisions can I make to improve the root mass? And that's where things like variety choice can become important, plant species choice, a little bit more plant species diversity, having tap roots combined with fibrous roots. So there are practical strategies in which we can more consciously think about and manage for more roots and more of those roots below ground. So
let's talk about plant biodiversity. This is something I touched on with Bart Davidson in episode 3 of this podcast series, when he walks into a paddock, I imagine he sees things that us mere mortals don't, a bit like the Matrix or something. So when you walk into a paddock on a property, can you sort of get a feel for the health, the soil? You know, what do you look for and what can you see?
Yeah, you know, there is this general idea that, you know, what's happening above ground, there are parallels, and that gives us indications of what's happening below ground. That is true of kind of a lot of soil classification. Often soils are classified by, you know, what types of plants grow in them, what type of plant communities can kind of grow in them from a little bit more of a naturalized bushland, et cetera, kind of perspective. So yeah, plants are indicators of soils, that is for sure. Yeah, there are things up on the surface that we are looking for. And yeah, plant species diversity is one of those. And I think that's true in a grazing, you know, pasture kind of context, although it does translate over to cropping scenarios as well. But obviously, we do grow a lot more monocultures in the cropping world for some other practical reasons, practical benefits there. But certainly in a grazing context, for sure, the plant species diversity is going to be one important indicator. And there'd be other really important things like soil cover, you know, how well are the soils covered, be that with residue and litters and material, through to how well is the soil covered with living plants, with green plants and functional plants as well. So those are some of the kind of the surface things. We could look at the quality of the soil surface. Is it crusting at the surface, or is it looking more crumbly, more open and friable? And the quality of the soil surface is also a really important indicator of what's going on below ground. And that plugs back to what I just mentioned there earlier, is that when we have well-structured soil that has well-aggregated and good porosity, so we have pore space in the soil, it's that pore space that lets the oxygen into the soil, lets the water to infiltrate, the rainfall to infiltrate into the soil. And those are the things that are going to keep that soil functioning. All that biology down there needs oxygen to breathe and water to drink, so to speak, or to function as well. So when we have a sealed surface, a cap on the soil surface, well, that definitely is going to limit and impede that gaseous exchange and limit that water infiltration. So just as an example there, I would say things like plant species diversity, soil cover generally, and then the condition of the soil surface particularly, are some very useful indicators before we even put the spade into the ground.
You're listening to episode 4 of the Stockyard Sessions podcast from Atlas Ag, the team behind Atlas Carbon and Meyer Grazing. And my guest on the podcast today is Joel Williams. Joel, you travel around the world for work. Do you see similar themes and trends when it comes to soil health and agroecological transitions? You know, what's your sort of global view on this?
I do find that most farmers are generally interested. There's a huge overlap, and generally they're interested in much of the same things, very many of the same topics. I guess I answer that question through the context of what am I asked to speak about? You know, what do event organizers ask me to speak about? And all farmers around the world, they're all interested in how do I improve my soil health? You know, whatever that means in their context, how do I improve my soil organic matter? How do I reduce inputs? How do I use less fertilizers? How do I use less pesticides? Linking to that, well, therefore, how do I improve plant health so that I don't need those pesticides? How do I improve animal health, animal performance? How can I improve the quality of their diets from what I grow from that soil? So I think those types of questions are universal. Everyone here in Canada wants to know that, and everyone back where you are in Australia, they all want to know that too. So I do find that there's actually huge overlap. Now, of course, what is different is maybe the context around that, you know, the scale in which that happens, the local resources and tools and strategies that are available in order to kind of navigate that pathway through that transition. So sure, the context, how we do it in different countries is going to be a bit different. But actually, I do find that there is this quite common overlap with the types of things that farmers are interested in learning more about from a soil perspective.
In Australia, we're seeing more and more farmers and producers interested in undergoing soil carbon projects. And we've got a pretty robust carbon market here. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you find producers are approaching you saying, I would like to consider a soil carbon project, where should I start? And is that the starting point for looking to improve soil health? Or is it more of a general desire to improve soil health first and then see what benefits or diversity of income streams can come with that improvement?
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably a mixed bag of answers out there for farmers there. But for me, I think from my experience anyway, that I think most are a little bit more interested in the soil health first. And if the soil carbon can then become a co-benefit from that, then that's a wonderful icing on the cake. But I think for most, there is a deeper underlying willing interest there to actually improve that aspect of their farm business. Because of soil, of course, it's the foundation of the farming business. And if the soil's not functioning, then many other aspects of the business are going to also be struggling. So I think generally it would start with soil health, but sure, boosting soil carbon is part of increasing soil health. So you're going to want to do that anyway in order to improve that soil health, because clearly soils that have more carbon in them, they have better physical condition, they have better biological activity, they'll have better nutrient availability. Carbon, you know, really sits at the centerpiece of that kind of Venn diagram of soil chemistry, physics, and biology. So it is a really key component of soil health. And that's why every farmer should be interested in soil carbon, whether or not they're going to do a carbon project, whether or not they go down that alley, down that pathway is irrelevant. They do need to be interested in strategies to build soil carbon for their soil health. And sure, if there's that additional icing on the cake, then sure, why not?
Do you see soil organic carbon sequestration as a part of the climate solution here in Australia? Is that something you're passionate about?
That's a good question, that one. It's, of course, a hotly debated one.
Yeah.
I guess my previous answer a little bit overlaps here, that soil carbon sequestration, it's real. You know, we can do it. We can clearly improve carbon in soils. And sure, out there at the moment, there's a whole lot of overhype, you know, about that and the potential of that, maybe to solve climate change and the like. But I would also say there's a whole lot of underhype, if I could use that word, about it as well, that it's not a solution or it's not potential. And I think we can get caught up in this debate about that quite unnecessarily. Sure, there's vocal opinions on both sides. And sure, there's a really important and rich debate to be had about that. I think that whether or not soils are going to solve climate change, probably not. But can they be a piece of the puzzle? You know, can they be a part of that story? Well, of course they can. And I think that's maybe perhaps the message we should more so focus on. I'm looking at that positive discussion. Well, how best to do that? How best to make it a piece of that puzzle moving forward? And I think that even the capacity or the ability of soils to sequester carbon is also hotly debated. And I also just come back to the reality that, look, we know for sure that if we go back in some of our historical records, we know for sure that in many parts of the world, and true in Australia as well, that we have lost a lot of soil carbon in the last 70-100 odd years. You know, so we go back to things like dust bowls and the land clearing and severe soil erosion and the carbon that's kind of been lost with that. What's for sure is that we have lost a lot of soil carbon in our soils. And we can kind of, instead of getting bogged down in this debate, why don't we just focus on saying, well, we know that our soils had much higher carbon previously. Why don't we at least get back to that state of carbon that they were? There's clearly potential to at least sequester that much, whether or not those soils were at saturation, and we can have kind of that debate too. But we can park that one to the side and just say, well, why don't we just focus right now on getting all of our soils back at least to that natural kind of potential of where they were. And in doing that, you know, we're going to make a substantial contribution to drawing carbon down out of the atmosphere and improving soil health and improving landscape function and all of those things at the same time. So, you know, there's a really positive conversation to be had there. And that would be a really good focus if we just got on our bike and did that. And while we do that, sure, we can go and carry on the science and carry on the discussion about how much is really that going to impact the whole climate change discussion. And we can work that out along the way. And it doesn't really matter, because right now what we should just be doing is getting started down that journey and having productive and positive conversations about how best to increase soil carbon. What are the best strategies in the various contexts? How do we do this with the best means, and work the rest out on the way? That's my kind of personal view on that whole debate anyway.
Fantastic. It makes a lot of sense. So farming management techniques like regen agriculture then are quite important to get us on that journey. Do we need to sort of look at the way that we farm and how we can go about that in terms of being more in touch with nature and increasing biodiversity and bolstering natural capital and all those things in order to start that journey, as you say, to return some of that carbon to the soil that we've lost.
Yeah, that's right, for sure. Those practices can absolutely help move us in that right direction. And, you know, that's the beauty of, you know, some of the kind of the soil health principles or the regenerative agriculture principles, is that they provide that kind of macro vision, that macro kind of strategy, umbrella kind of strategy of how to improve. It generally, if you follow these principles, you're generally going to be moving your soils in the right direction. And that's kind of the beauty of those principles. That's why they've been so successfully adopted in many parts around the world. Sure, and again, the context of those different parts is different and how we do it is different. But generally, at a macro level, if you're following those principles of minimizing disturbance, keeping that soil covered, soil armor, living plants, living roots, diversity, as we mentioned, and integrating livestock, you know, generally, if you're following those principles as best you can, applying them to the maximum that you can in your context, then generally, you're going to be moving your soils in the right direction. And yeah, that is going to help you to also build soil carbon as part of that. And so, sure, you know, I think that we do need some new vocabulary and some new ideas and some new strategies moving forward. What we've been doing for the last 70 odd years plus, you know, especially since World War II with the intensification of agriculture. Look, of course, it's done a great job at increasing productivity and feeding the world, etc. And that's, of course, that's fantastic. And that's all really important. So it's not to belittle that, but it's just to say that, look, along that journey, it was the right thing to do post-World War when we had food shortages. The right focus was productivity. And that's absolutely fantastic. But we also have to acknowledge that with that came some hidden consequences. And some of those hidden consequences has been soil decline, soil degradation, soil carbon, soil fertility decline, and therefore landscape decline, ecological decline. And so these are the things that we need to rectify. And clearly, we're not going to improve those things by doing the same thing that we've done for the last 70 odd plus years. So clearly we need a new path and we need a new conversation and some new strategies to kind of take us there. And look, we can have that debate about whether or not regenerative agriculture principles are the thing that's going to get us there. But again, clearly it seems that it's been a conversation starter. It's been a fantastic conversation starter. Again, hotly debated on both sides here. But nonetheless, it has seems to have captured the imagination of many all around the world. And that's the important and most important first step, because we've got to be having these conversations. Okay, again, as we move on from, as regenerative becomes maybe less of the buzzword that it is right now, as we move on to other hybrid systems, again, we'll work all that out along the way. But if we don't start that conversation right now, then we're never going to get there. So look, I think regenerative is just the word at the moment that is seems to be that word that has captured this discussion. So let's roll with it. Let's look at those practices and those principles and let's see what their potential is. And sure, as we move on, yeah, we might find other things and other strategies and other ways to do things even better. And that's great. But we've got to get going there first before we work all of that stuff out too.
And in the same way that soils take time to degrade, you know, they're going to take time to regenerate as well. So some patience on the journey.
That's right. Absolutely. Very important.
It's been fascinating talking to you. I've learned so much. You're incredibly articulate about all of this. So thank you again for taking the time to join the podcast. When are you back in Australia and when can people come and see you? I think Wilmot Field Day is always a favourite of yours, which is in March next year, or are you back sooner than that?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say or not, but funnily enough, I am back in March next year.
Okay, yeah, no spoilers.
No, that's right, yeah. No, I've been invited to Wilmot Field Day, so yeah, it looks very much like I will be returning. But yeah, beyond that, I will be back in Australia in March. I'll have a few other events around the country, I'm sure, as well. I've just started working on that and started to piece together that tour. But you should be seeing me at Wilmot Field Day and around Australia in March next year.
We very much look forward to that. Finally, what about you and your business? What's on the cards for you in the next sort of 3 to 5 years and your long-term planning? Is it doing more of what you're doing now, working with producers, helping agricultural industries grow and improve productivity? You know, what's the aspiration for you when you look forward?
Yeah, okay, wow. That's a good question. I think at its core, you know, what I'm really about and what I really love to do is help farmers. And I do try my best to use my communication skills to help them make better decisions. And I do that through that lens of education, helping them understand their soils better so that they can make better business decisions. And so for me, yeah, that is my big passion. You know, if I look back in my youth and my history, education for me was a hugely important leverage, and it really helped me in life. And therefore, I am very passionate more generally about the role of education and how that can help people, you know, all of us around the world, how education can be a tool for change. And so, yeah, that is kind of why through the work at Integrated, I do through Integrated Soils, is primarily focused on education. As I say, I do a bit of consulting and things as well, and I do really enjoy that. And that's also a really nice part of the job. But it is, if I look at the consulting work that I do, that's kind of done through a lens of education. I just explain to farmers what they need to know and help them make the decisions ultimately. So for me, I'm very passionate about education and the role of that in transformation. And that is therefore why I choose to primarily focus all my time and effort on education. So yeah, I'm always thinking about, I've got a long, long list of new topics that I want to research, that I want to develop educational resources and material for, some online courses. And, you know, I love to think about creative ways to do education. How can we engage farmers, be that in the classroom or out there in the field, in ways that helps them understand and helps them through their transition as well. So yeah, for me, look, I'll be honest and say it is just a lot more of the same thing, but just kind of keeping on evolving that message, bringing in new information, keeping things updated, sharing some of the latest science, and also connecting farmers with other farmers and getting that kind of peer-to-peer knowledge exchange so that there is this, at the field level there, this really kind of ground bottom up kind of part of the movement, that kind of what regenerative is all about. So really helping to kind of play my role and helping to bring some of the science into that discussion of that farmer led field kind of driven movement that this kind of soil health and regenerative kind of approach seems to be. So yeah, that's kind of, I think, roughly where I'll be in the next 3 to 5 years or so. More of the same thing, but hopefully keeping it fresh and interesting.
That's brilliant. And look, I really get a sense of sort of hope and positivity from you during this interview. You know, there's hope for the future. And I think that comes across very clearly. And I think that's something you're very passionate about.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, the alternative is what? You know, so I guess we've got to be a bit positive. It helps motivate me, I suppose, to do the work that I do. And like all of us in our careers, you know, we all have highs and lows and good days and bad days. And I think it's important to kind of keep that positive mindset about the future. And that's a good motivator to kind of keep going and keep pushing the boundaries.
Fantastic. Look, if people wanted to find out more about you and your work and what you do, where would you suggest they go?
Okay, my website is integratedsoils.com. And on there I have some resources and articles and things that I've written, information about me, some links and some online courses, and as well as all of my event listings and things. So yeah, I always keep the event listings up to date. So anytime if folks want to kind of follow me and see where I'm at, or I have a mailing list and things. And I'm also on the usual social media channels as well, always at Integrated Soils.
It's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you again for your time, and hope to see you back in Australia soon. But Joel, for the time being, thank you very much indeed.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To learn more about how Atlas Carbon helps graziers investigate their soil carbon potential, visit the Atlas Carbon website. And to learn more about how Meyer Grazing helps livestock producers make great grazing decisions, visit the Meyer Grazing website.